Hi, I'm Barry Governor. I'm with Pittsburgh Poetry Exchange. I have one poem. Home. I separate the slats of the firwood blind just enough to get a view of the neighborhood. Today's first weather report. Rooftops wear a slight coat of frost. The clear skies don't hold my attention. It's that single chimney's white-gray wisp of condensing air. It seems all chimneys should have wisps of smoke. It dawns on me. Then, coal-fed furnaces. Now, newer gas models. Side vents, outside air in, inside air out. From my home atop the ridge, the slope fell to plateaued neighborhoods, then fell again to floodplain. On chill spring days like this, I'd stand by the kitchen window, look down slope, plateau, then slope again to valley floor. Across the Monongahela, slag scar furrows, furrows that climbed from riverside rail beds to the top of the ridge. I'd look to the left, along the rail line, to the Manesson Mill and its usual plethora of toxic plumes. I always returned to the houses, along the river, tucked on the slopes, each chimney spewing gritty gray bituminous residues. Up and down the valley, those wisps of smoke meant life, warmth, comfort, security, home.
Dress company. They paid apprentice wages, but it was better than no job at all. Her desk was against the wall, behind the other desk, in a big room with racks of dresses. The bookkeeper. Wait. I'm sorry, I need the light. That's better. The bookkeeper, training her to take his job, hovered behind her, his hot, garlicky breath on her neck. No, no, that's wrong. Can't you write smaller? She overheard the boss saying to the bookkeeper, and I have to look at that face every morning. She was spending time in the washroom down the hall, murmuring affirmations. Love and joy surround me, and abundance is mine. One afternoon, the designer poked his head in the workroom, asked, would she try on dresses? So she escaped a short time from the stench of garlic. The designer didn't care. Her figure was less than perfect. She tried the dresses on. And just as she finished, the designer's wife arrived. Walking back to her desk, she could hear them. She's not your model. I am. I'm a perfect nine. Well, you weren't here. I had to do some shopping. Next day, the bookkeeper told the boss, I can do it better myself. So she was relieved of her bookkeeping. Hang dresses, the boss told her. The change was nice. Finally, her shoulder ached. Next week, she found herself at the state employment office. They'd heard complaints about that company. They asked, was hanging dresses in your job description? They told her, request a hearing, and weeks later awarded her benefits. the murmur and din of voices and footsteps on stone tile echoed in the vast indoor space as she walked the length of the train station. She'd had a good day, felt in a happy mood, couldn't help smiling at the people walking toward her. Among them, a dark-haired man and heavy-set, strangely familiar, his face beat red as he tipped his hat. As they passed each other, she realized he was her boss from the dress company. Thank you.
Rose Lisak, where you at, Rosie Rose?
The title of this poem is A Different Light, and it didn't have a title until I got here this evening. And I think we all see things in a different light. We get used to seeing things in our own way, and then when we are faced with things other than what we think we see, and it's a different light. Beside the lake, I leaned into my reflection, hard searching. Saw tomorrow with the next day, and with the aftertaste, the wildness came, looming from behind. Grew a quiet face next to mine. We watched a tired pair of hands beneath, stuffing dreams into white envelopes, old tears, rusted streaks, marking them with had.
For the last few weeks, I've been reading poems from my chapbook published by Finishing Mind Press, Resilient Spirit, Poems for Lorraine. Lorraine was my sister-in-law. In the latter years of her life, she had dementia. And the poems in this book, and they're interspersed with some excerpts from my journals, are about those final years. As I observed, as the ending of the foreword says, I observed and experienced the changes that happened in her mind and body, but her spirit remained. And the term resilient spirit was something that her daughter had said about her, that she had a peaceful, resilient spirit. Last week, I read two poems near the end of the book. They were both about African violets, which were Lorraine's favorite flower. And the second of the two poems, African violets too, was about how I ordered, I called the florist, after Lorraine had passed away, I called the florist to order something for the funeral parlor, and it was recommended that I get a dish garden. I had actually never heard of that term before. But I rather liked what it turned out to be. And this is the last part of the second poem I read last week. When I took the dish garden home after all the viewings at the funeral home, after family good nights until tomorrow's service and lunch, I carry my arrangement home. Only when I raise the dish to a high shelf, see its curved surface, inches from my eyes, do I recognize the glossy pattern. Five purple petals, heart-shaped leaves, the very flowers you love. And I didn't know until I got it home that the design on the pot was African violets. So tonight I'm going to read the final poem in the book, which is, as you'll see, 5 years later. And the cover art on the book is about what is described in the final poem, and this is actually the original art. Epilogue 2007, Dish Garden. For 5 years now, this tangle of greenery has overflowed its bowl and flourished on little care. Roots watered once a week, shriveled leaves plucked away. 3 species I cannot name riot in just enough light. A stalk of yellow-green blades rockets toward the ceiling. A spray of oversized fronds erupts. And overflowing the dish's rim, long stems, broad green heart shapes trail down, nearly hide the ceramics' purple blooms. Planted for a few days' viewing, this garden will not give up. Atop a towering shelf, its shades, a framed photo, Lorraine newly widowed, an autumn angel figurine, a living violet in its own green pot. Thank you.
Sheila Kelly.
Thank you, Don. Okay, that's good. The Kitchen Maid. Trying to write The Kitchen Maid, the painting by Vermeer. The way he lit her through panes of glass, such intense light. I can't stop looking at her collar and cap, that yellow bodice, those flushed cheeks. It's the weight of her I love. In a blue phthalo overskirt, pinned back to reveal magenta beneath. Green oversleeves pushed up on thick arms, standing, immersed in work. And if she feels a pain against the day, it is silent. Her face half shadow, eyes and lips downcast. What world of yearning lay inside her unhurried work? She reminds me of you, Mother. No shoes on your feet. The English-speaking kids called you peasant, and you took it, your cheeks burning. Held it in as a woman under a stiff girdle, and he could have painted you in our kitchen, every day preparing the meals. Every day making your peace with milk, bread, a tureen of soup. What I wouldn't give to watch you stand over our formica counter. Things that once were always are not now. Each morning, every unfilled longing spread out before you, every wall in our flowered paper kitchen reflecting white and umber light, your thick features like dabs of impasto.
Anybody else? My leg's killing me. I pulled it.
You know, I got this at Half Price Bookstore, The Poems of Mayo Seitung. He's not that good. And he was nominated for the Nobel. And I thought, wow, there's still hope for me. I'm going to be in the run. If, you know, I think he was, of course, he had like 100 million people. I think maybe that's why. Oh, he's got as you guys. Well, it's, I'd rather have you. Oh, shit, what are you going to do? You know, did somebody lose their hat? Oh, that's a shame. We'll get it later. You know, you guys don't know. If you don't know, I'll tell you. I was a police officer
and we had to go along with the Constitution. Okay. I always thought that was, you know, I mean, how many people actually read the Constitution? I did. I was always hunting for loopholes, so to speak. But, you know, but it's true. And this poem is called Tap Dancing on the Constitution. Sometimes you got to, and this is what police do, so in case you know, I can let you know. Sometimes you just got to do stuff and hell with the consequences because, as they say, easier to ask forgiveness than permission. I don't usually like to admit to violating the United States' Constitution, but once in a while, I may have did a tap dance on the document, but it was always done in the stage and under the lights of serving and protecting, and the good Lord knows that there are many that need to be served and protected, at least from themselves, and for sure, I was the thin blue line, but I'll tell you for real, I watched many wipe themselves with our precious document, and that's no lie. But for sure, I wouldn't give you names because most of these men and women are high and mighty lawyers and judges, and I would never want to start an investigation into the character of those that are considered the pillars of the community. Anyway, one time I choked a man because he was wolf pussy talking and breathing stink on my badge. So I silenced his madness with a little yoking, and it seemed to work out for everybody's favor. And to tell you the truth, a strangle can silence a man and even teach him manners. And there was no need to arrest him, so it didn't cost him too much more than an endearing moment of choke. Well, his aunt thought she was Joan of Arc, and she stepped forward while he was being choked and kind of jumped on my back, which wasn't a real good idea at the time. And Timmy Tim grabbed her by the back of her head and by the seat of her pants and tossed her through a screen door, which was okay as far as I was concerned. But I'll tell you, she weren't too happy being launched through a screen door, especially when she landed on her fat ass, which, of course, made her mad as all go to hell. And as she was rubbing her ass, she got in my face demanding names and badges and was going to call Action News and the mayor and governor. And I told her to call the president of the United States and tell her that I danced on the Constitution because I didn't have a warrant, or at least I think I didn't have a warrant, or maybe I did have a warrant. It could have been a warrant, but it was a long time ago. And if I was warrantless, it was all done in good faith, and I didn't mean no harm, and I swear to God, it was all about the wolf pussy man selling heroin in the neighborhood. And as I walked away, she wanted to know my name, and I told her my name was Officer Fat Frank McDonough, which, of course, wasn't my real name, and I told her my badge number was 666. And as I walked away, she was writing my name and badge number, and all the while rubbing her ass, and I couldn't resist. Lady, you got a cute ass. If you want me to rub it, I'm obliging. And she said, fuck you, Fat Frank. And I said, you're welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a true story. Thank you. Next week, let's come back and have some more fun.